Checkerfin. Checkerfin.
Boredom is always in my head.
Checkerfin. Checkerfin.
Yes.
It's the education gadfly.
Sex, sex.
Mike and Rick tell you
early college, high school,
know about
pain and suffering,
learning and teaching.
In your face, in your face,
your words that they be preaching. Cause here's the education gadfly show.
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, here with my guest co-host, Sandy Jacobs.
Hello, Mike.
Hello, Sandy. Welcome to the show. We should introduce you to our listeners in case they don't know you, but if they don't know you, they have been living under a rock, Sandy, because you are a rock star, vice president at the National Council on Teacher Quality, and formerly the deputy director of the Reading First program.
Yes.
Welcome, Sandy. Well, Reading First has been in the news quite a bit lately. We've been seeing to that. We had a recent report out on that topic, which we'll talk about. Sandy was a part of our panel just the other day on that very subject. Sandy, let's talk, though, about another, shall we say, teachable moment. You used to teach in inner city New York City.
This is true.
Fourth and fifth graders. Okay, so if you were in the classroom today and all over the newspapers is the news about a certain Governor Spitzer getting in a certain amount of trouble, and your students are curious about what all the hullabaloo is about, what do you tell them?
Well, I guess the good news is that your average fourth or fifth grader is familiar with the term prostitute, so that's helpful. But it's a sad story, and it's as a teacher, boy, I'm glad I'm not in the classroom today having to deal with that, because you do. You have to explain to kids what's going on, and they need to understand, and that it's just not a, you know, as many punchlines as there are.
Yes.
Especially when your governor's name's Spitzer. You just...
Nice one, Sandy. That was good. Would you say that in the classroom?
No, you wouldn't. Okay. You wouldn't. That's an example of what...
So you would just refer to him as the governor.
The governor.
Yes. The former governor.
Or the former governor. Yes. Yeah, I guess it depends what time of day you were talking about this too.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm glad I'm not having to deal with that today.
Okay, well... lots of things to cover today. We, of course, will play a game of Pardon the Gadfly. With Sandy, you know, Rick is away, I don't know, gallivanting about, doing something. Who knows? It's hard to keep up with Rick Hess. It's hard to keep...
He's a gallivanter.
He is a gallivanter. He was a part of a nice New York Times magazine piece.
I did see
Sunday.
That.
Did you see that? Yeah, he and Joel Klein and several other gallivanters talking about education philanthropy. But he is not with us today. We're glad Sandy is. We'll play Pardon the Gadfly. We will, of course, have... an education outrage of the week here with Mr. Jeff Kooner, a man who, if you watch, there was a video that we did the other day, the Fordham Foundation. We gave a little protest speech about what's happened to Reading First. You can see this on our website at excellence.net and YouTube. It's a little cheesy, I'll admit, this video of me giving the speech, but looming behind me looks to be like an 8 foot tall Jeff Kooner. And Liam thinks he looked like he's from the Stasi or something. Yeah,
it's an optical illusion.
Optical illusion. He does look tough, like he's gonna, you know, break somebody's kneecaps or something. Anyways, you can check that out, and now you can see for yourself, listeners, what Jeff Kooner, Canadian and Mr. Education Outrage of the Week, actually looks like. He's big. I mean, people have called him little Rush Limbaugh. He's no little Rush Limbaugh. He looks about twice the size of Rush Limbaugh on this one. Not height wise. That's all.
The camera is very deceiving.
The camera lies. Okay, and then we will, of course, hear from Liam in our Education News of the Weird. Let's get started with Pardon the Gadfly.
Topic 1, Reading First. Some friends on the left say they feel bad about such a great program getting cut, but can't get over the scandal. What do you say to them?
Well, boy, I have a lot to say on this topic, but I know there's a time limit here at Gadfly that's strictly enforced, so I'm going to talk fast. You know, the first thing I'd say is not to look at what's been written about the scandal. You can't make air quotes on a podcast, scandal. But, you know, if you go back and look at the actual findings, they bear little resemblance to what's been written and said, and that's really quite a shame.
In other words, when you look at the Inspector General's reports, and then you look at the media coverage of that, there's a big disconnect.
There's a big disconnect. Yeah. You know, all the coverage is about conflicts of interest. There's no findings of conflict of interest. There are some findings of appearance of conflict of interest. And that's a very, very different thing. And there's a very short list of successful federal education programs, a very short list. And that list gets even shorter if you look at programs of any size, of any magnitude. And Reading First is huge. So I'd say to people, you know, programs do not succeed in spite of how they're run. They succeed because of how they're run. And there's so much evidence that this is a successful program. So you have to look at everything through that lens. And most importantly, you have to say, how can you punish children taking away a successful program from them?
Well, I think that's the key point, right? Because there are people out there who hate George Bush and are going to continue to hate George Bush. And they're going to just want to believe that this was another scandal like Halliburton and all the rest that we've dealt with in recent years. But, you know, even if you are insisting on believing that, though it's not true, if you're insisting on believing that there was some mismanagement, you look at the results and you say poor children in some of the most impoverished schools in this country are learning to read, and they weren't before. This is a targeted program for the poor. How can the left be against this?
And the data speak for themselves. They really do.
Okay. Thank you. Next question.
This idea to pay the nation's, quote, worst teachers $10,000 in order to quit. Is this sort of aggressive anti-union effort needed? Smart?
Interesting writing there, Christina.
I read what I'm given.
Okay, well, let me explain a little bit here. So there's a new group out called teacherunionfacts.org. They are out to show the malicious impact of teacher unions, they say. And so they have started this stunt. They've said they'll pay $10,000 for the worst teachers in the country to quit. And so they want people to nominate who are those worst unionized teachers so they get a list of some bad teachers. Now, even right here in this very podcast, we have talked about some horrible, horrible teachers who have charged with heinous crimes who have not yet been fired. So they're going to get into this strange dynamic, it seems like, where they're going to pay $10,000 to child abusers and molesters and the like. I'm not sure that's a good news. However, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world to have a group out there, you know, throwing some bombs, you know, and making it clear that as much as our teacher union friends do some very valuable things, they do tend to protect bad teachers from getting fired. And that's unconscionable. Don't you think, Sandy?
I do agree that, you know, unions do in a lot of ways protect bad teachers and keep them in classrooms. And, you know, they don't exist to serve children's interests, they exist to serve adult interests. I'm a little worried that, you know, this becomes a sort of Facebook, what's the worst story you can tell about a teacher ever, and sort of, you know, a humiliation factor and you know, lots of innuendo flying in every direction. It does feel, you know, like a stunt more than a legitimate effort to identify teachers who shouldn't be in classrooms and do something about it. But it certainly puts attention on an important issue.
But, you know, the unions get very touchy on this point, and they reacted with a lot of anger to this, and they threw some bombs themselves, the people that are behind this effort. I mean, but if you're a teacher union, I mean, why haven't they been more out front on really trying to show some impressive numbers of how many teachers they're going to push out of the classroom every year based on peer reviews and the like? I mean, isn't there pressure on them to do that sort of thing?
You know, I think there's external pressure, but there isn't a lot of internal pressure. When you just look at the number of states and districts that, you know, don't evaluate teachers on any regular basis, and the unions have a lot to do with why those policies continue. So, you know, there's a lot they can do short of, you know, putting people in the stockade, in the, what's that thing with the, well, you put your head in the Puritan stockade, is that the stockade? Yeah. Everyone's looking at me kind of blankly.
Yeah. And there's a guillotine.
Short of the guillotine, right? To really start making sure we have effective teachers in classrooms.
And I'm sure some of our listeners will say, well, you know, the problem is that principals and administrators aren't doing their job and getting rid of teachers. Okay, next question.
Last one. A new charter school in New York plans to pay its teachers $125,000 per year, but will have large class sizes and more accountability in return. Is this a good idea?
I just have to say that I always, when I listen to this, think Christina just has the best voice. Doesn't she have the best voice?
She does.
Thank you.
She does. And yet lately, it hasn't always been on the show. She's too busy doing other things.
Oh,
and
well, you need her.
I'm glad we do. Christina, we need you.
She sounds so good. Yeah. Anyway, back to the question. I think it's an interesting experiment, and one of the, you know, exciting things about charter schools is that they're able to do these kinds of experiments. I think it's a little bit, you know, there's certainly a lot of fine-tuning, a lot of things that need to be worked out. This school says it's going to operate within normal budget parameters, so that is going to mean, you know, the money's got to come from someplace else. They say they're going to start with less teachers because they're paying them so much. And are they going to really be able to have expertise in all the subject areas that they need if they only have a few teachers that they're paying a lot? But they seem to have some strong criteria. They know what they're looking for. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting for sure.
No, absolutely. You know, the article about this, the New York Times article, was very interesting. Randy Weingarten, the head of the United Federation of Teachers, back to those unions again. You know, she had nice things to say. Of course, look, I mean, they're paying teachers $125,000 a year. She said, oh, yeah, that's a great idea. But she was a little concerned that these are not going to be unionized teachers. And, you know, what might happen if a teacher disagrees with the principal on something? Would there
chaos,
be some conflict?
Chaos.
Anyway, it just seems amazing to me that, you know, you see a school embracing so much of the union's agenda, they still have their doubts. A lot of skepticism.
The principal's union wasn't too fond of the proposal either, which seems to be that the principal will make less than the teachers.
Yes, which is very interesting. Okay, well, that's it for Pardon the Gadfly. Now get ready to be outraged. Jeff Kooner, our 8-foot-tall education outrage of the week correspondent. Tell us, what's outrageous this week, Jeff?
Well, Mike, it's good to be with you again. I mean, it's hard to top the whole Spitzer thing, to tell you the truth. I mean, it's just, I've never seen anything like it.
That's because you're from Canada.
Well, that's true. We don't have sleazebags like that up in Canada. I mean, to me, this guy, and you know, to me, it was the press conference, the first press conference, where he just came out for 30 seconds. He drags his poor wife with him.
Yep.
And then does his sort of, you know, oh, you know, I've sinned against my family. I'm so sorry. I need to repair things with my family. This is a private matter. And then, but I'll see you tomorrow at work. Adios, amigos. And then he sort of takes off. And you know, and then apparently now he's resigned. Thank the Lord he's resigned. But the thing that gets me is there are media reports coming out. His wife wants him to stay. What? His wife was literally demanding that he stay, that he fight this thing and stay on as governor. And my question is, I mean, do these people have any honor? Do they have any sense of shame? And so, look, here's my advice to Spitzer. Now that he's out of public service, he should become literally, I think, a top lawyer or aide or maybe even spokesperson for the unions, for the teachers' unions. He'd be fantastic. He can come up there and whenever there's, I don't know, a teacher molesting a child or something like that, come on and say, no, that person shouldn't be kicked out of the classroom. This is a private matter. He has to solve it with his family and then he can come back and show up to work next day. My memo to the NEA and the AFT, go grab Spitzer. He's the best thing you guys will have for the next couple of years.
Wow. Okay. I did not see that coming, Jeff.
Now to the next sort of outrage. Really, I'm not making this up. This is such an outrageous story. It's a Los Angeles Times story, March 6th, for all you listeners out there. There is a woman by the name of, I kid you not, Sean Spitzer, no relation to Elliot Spitzer, sends her 13-year-old daughter to a Los Angeles high school, Camarillo High School. And she notices, now check this out, this is a daughter who suffers from autism. She's got serious disabilities and she cannot speak. This poor girl cannot speak.
Right.
She notices month after month, her daughter is coming home. The minute she comes home, she's rushing off to the refrigerator.
She's starving. Yeah.
Sean Spitzer says, well, I don't get it. I pack, you know, I put snacks in a lunchbox and I give her $5 every day to get a hot meal at the cafeteria. So she complains to the school authorities. The school authorities put a hidden camera with this girl, this daughter of Sean Spitzer, with the special education assistant, somebody who frankly could have been Elliot Spitzer's mistress, or a Christine Santoyo. You want to talk about scum? Check out this woman. They catch her twice in 3 days stealing this poor girl's $5 from her lunchbox. They later found out that she had been stealing from this poor girl 57 times over 3 months.
From a girl with autism.
Autism, who couldn't speak, who couldn't complain, who couldn't say anything. All right? This is the kind of woman this Christine Santoyo is. So, you know, there is some justice in the world, just as Elliot Spitzer was forced to resign. Christine Santoyo was convicted of theft, petty theft, and cruelty to a child. She's got 6 months in prison and a 3-year probation.
Now, didn't her lawyer defend her?
She's got a meth problem. I mean, you know what I think of lawyers. Now, check this out, all right? If you tell me if these are not the sleaziest people outside of Elliot Spitzer on the face of the planet, okay? The lawyer in court, this is what he argues. that we should feel sorry for Christine Santoyo. Why? Because she was addicted to crack cocaine and methamphetamines.
Yeah.
Apparently, when they arrested her, they found her little crack pipe in her purse.
So, I mean, what should happen here is not only when she's in jail, should she not get access, of course, to her drugs. They shouldn't give her lunch every day.
I like that.
That would be fair.
I like that. And they forced her to pay, by the way, the $285 restitution to the daughter of Sean Spitzer. But here is the real outrage. The real outrage is this. This is a woman we've now found out who has been teaching at the school for 11 years. Over 11 years, okay? She was convicted of criminal theft in 2001. This is a woman who was an addict for years. Where were the background checks? I mean, you have somebody working in your school district, who has a criminal record, right. who's coming to school right. stoned out of her mind. Don't they have regular drug testing policies? I mean, this to me is absolutely outrageous. The lawyers are outrageous. The lawyer is outrageous for defending her, saying, you know, it's because, well, feel sorry for her. She's addicted to methamphetamine. And the school district. So, you know, this is outrageous all the way around, but justice did prevail.
Thank you, Jeff Kuhner, with our education outrage of the week. Whew, Sandy, you know, somebody listening to this is going to say, wow, you guys are beating up a lot on teachers of various sorts. But again, the real outrage here was with the administrators, you know, that they let this happen and they didn't.
You know. How do you not, how are you not aware that you have, you know, a drug addict supervising special ed children yeah. Day after day?
Yeah, yeah. Whew, well, I tell you, that is upsetting. But, you know, we need a little levity here. We can't be all upset about these, you know, that is a very depressing thing. But Liam is here to help us, you know, raise our spirits. Because it is that time that we wait for all week long. Education news of the weird time. With our weird correspondent, Liam Julian. Liam, what's weird this week?
You know, Mike, I just want to say that every time I listen to this show, I always think, what a wonderful voice Jeff Kuhner has.
Well, if you were 8 feet tall, you'd have a deep, wonderful voice like that too.
Yeah, it's just such a beautiful, soothing voice.
You should sing opera.
Eighth grader Michael Sheridan was suspended from school in New Haven, Connecticut for 3 days, barred from attending an honors student dinner, and stripped of his title of class vice president because he bought Skittles at school. Skittles, in this case, is not a new name for, say, crystal meth. I'm speaking about Skittles, the candy, the rainbow of taste. School spokeswoman Catherine Sullivan DiCarlo said, quote, "There are no candy sales allowed in schools, period," unquote. Michael Sheridan claims he was in a school hallway after lunch when a classmate asked if he wanted some candy. The student had a lunchbox filled with the stuff, and a wad of money, according to Sheridan. When a school administrator noticed the transaction, Michael said the student, quote, "threw the candy." Michael pocketed the Skittles that he had already purchased, though, still unsure that anything was wrong. But it was. So very, very wrong. And that's education news of the weird.
So this wasn't so much an anti-Skittles campaign as an anti-candy in general.
Candy in general.
Campaign. Right. Wow, that was some serious punishment for that Skittles offense.
The Skittles dealer was also suspended.
Oh, okay. Well, that's only fair.
Right.
Yeah.
So both. The user and the dealer. Could send Sheridan to rehab, though. I mean, it might be a better course of action.
I don't know, Sandy. What is going on with our schools? We get somebody who's on meth, stealing money from a lunchroom, and nothing happens. And some kid, you know, buys a thing of Skittles and gets slammed.
And he'll never get into college now that he's been stripped of his class vice president title.
It's so true. I mean,
let's nominate the meth user who stole from the autistic student for the $10,000.
That's a great idea. Would they give it to somebody already in jail? Has she been fired? Do we know that?
Oh, that's good.
She's probably been fired. Yeah, that was a good idea. Woo! All right. Well, Sandy, thank you for joining us today. Hope you'll come back.
I'd love to. Thank you.
Okay. Until then, I'm Mike Petrilli.
I'm Sandy Jacobs. That was fun to say.
Yeah, that was fun to say. And we're the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, signing off.